from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Less than a year after declaring one long drought over, state officials are concerned we could be facing another one. That's because the state snowpack, which supplies a third of California's water needs, is at very low levels for this time of year. And forecasters say we're headed into another week of dry, warm weather. So here to analyze all of this and tell us where we're at is Jeff Mount. He's senior fellow at the Public Policy Institute of California. He's also emeritus professor of earth and planetary sciences at UC Davis. Good morning, Jeff Mount.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Thanks so much for being here this morning. And also, Dan Brecky is with us. He is an editor and reporter for KQED News. Good morning, Dan Brecky.
Hey there, Mina.
So, Dan, just start by telling us where the most recent snowpack measurement left us.
It left us with what electronic sensors had already told us, that there is very little snow compared to what we usually see this time of year. And we're on track officially now for perhaps the lowest snowpack on record. Now, the caveat there is we still have a bit of the rainy, snowy season to go. But, you know, frankly, there's no measure of snow or precipitation that looks good. There are in the northern California area, there's something called the 8-station index, which is running significantly below normal. Near one of the driest years on record so far, and actually well below 2015, which was for the snowpack the lowest on record. Stream runoff, river runoff has been very low this season, and so there's nothing you can see or look at that really tells you that we're in a good situation as far as the weather that we've seen this season. The one bright spot, and it's a limited bright spot, but it is something, is that the reservoirs were filled up last year, except for Lake Oroville, of course, which had to be emptied and kept low because of the disaster up there last year.
Well, yes, and so I was reading that statewide the snowpack is at less than 30% of average, Jeff Mountain. Can you just remind us why the snowpack is so important?
Well, as you said, it supplies about a third of our water supply, but that's not really the way you want to think about snowpack. Snowpack is our largest surface reservoir, so what it's capable of doing is storing water all the way until late spring when it lets it go, and that actually gives us more flexibility in our large reservoirs, particularly those along the western slope of the Sierra Nevada. And that's why snowpack is so important. It is letting its stored water go about the time we hit peak demand for water, which is for irrigation, principally in the Central Valley.
And, you know, I was reading, Jeffrey Mount, that some are not only asking if we're entering another drought, but whether or not we ever left the drought at all, meaning that last year was a blip in a very long dry spell.
Yeah, I like to remind everybody that a switch was flipped. Well, there's been two switches. One about in 1980 when our average temperatures, wintertime temperatures, as well as summertime temperatures, started to go above the previous century. And so we've been in a particularly warm period. And that's actually quite important in the hydrologic cycle. And then the second switch flipped at the end of that very wet period at the end of the 1990s. And starting around 2000, we have entered into what most hydrologists would consider to be a long-term dry period, and that is because we only have a handful of wet years. Now, we've had some spectacularly wet years, 2006, 2011, and then, of course, last year, 2017. But the majority of the rest of the years, in fact, the overwhelming majority, have been dry, much below the average of the previous century. So, you know, we are in an extended dry period. That seems to be an unavoidable conclusion, punctuated by a few moments of excitement when we get these really wet years.
And Dan Brecky, you mentioned that the bright spot is that our reservoirs are full for the most part. And is that why state officials and others are just saying it's far too early to declare another emergency?
Well, I think there are two messages they're giving the public. One is that conservation has to be the rule in California. And that is something that's a message that is pretty clear from state water officials. But on the other hand, I think, you don't hear people talking about imposing the kinds of conservation measures that were mandatory during the worst years of the drought. So, you know, even though the message is out there in sort of an advertising marketing sense that we need to conserve, it's not coming out in a way that sort of pounds that message home, that that's what we need to be thinking about right now. And given the facts that Jeff was just talking about, probably just as a way of life in the future.
We're talking about the lack of rain we've had so far this winter in what's supposed to be California's wettest months and the likelihood of whether or not we'll recover in the next 6 weeks and what it could mean if we don't. I mean, do you think California is headed for another drought or that we never really left one? What questions do you have for Dan Brecke and Jeff Mount? You can call us at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, on Facebook or Twitter, or email us at forum@kqed.org. Dan Brecke, of course, is transportation and everything else editor and reporter for KQED News. And then Jeff Mount is a senior fellow at the Public Policy Institute of California. Now, Jeff Mount, one thing I wanted to ask you about was, while there are concerns that the snowpack is shrinking and could be shrinking long term, that we wouldn't necessarily get less water as a state, that it would fall as rain. And I'm wondering, why is that problematic?
So let's go right. That goes right to the heart of one of the issues of debate in the scientific community: is are we seeing what the future looks like here? A large number are suggesting this last drought we had, which we may still be in, by the way, was so unusually warm, and that translated to much more rainfall relative to the total amount of snowfall. Why that is a problem is principally because the snowpack serves as a reservoir, acts like an additional reservoir in the state, and stores that water. That's the first problem. The second is, take places like Folsom Dam right near Sacramento. Folsom Dam we have to keep pretty empty during the winter in order to provide flood protection downstream for the city of Sacramento. So if what was being stuffed up there as snow is now coming down as rain, you just have to let it go. You really have no choice because you have to protect the downstream users. So it really puts us in a bind when we have these multiple uses for our large reservoirs, and principally the tension between flood control and water supply. And that's one of the big problems. And then finally, the high temperatures that are associated with this, that means a lot more water is lost to the atmosphere simply through evaporation or transpiration by plants.
So I'm hearing two things. One, we could lose a lot more water through evaporation and transpiration, but also you're saying that if the reservoirs are full and we're getting all this rain, that's problematic in terms of flooding, right, Dan Brecke?
Yeah.
And Jeff Mount, sorry. Yes?
Yeah, let me jump in real quick. I want to disabuse people of a notion that our reservoirs are in great shape right now. They are, relative to their historical averages, but we count on spring snowmelt to fill them up. And if you don't have the spring snowmelt, we'll be having a different conversation about our reservoirs come late April and May. And so that's why snow is so important.
I see. But I guess also what I'm getting at is it sounds like that the state needs to make some kind of a plan for how we deal with a lot of water coming at different times of the year if it falls more as rain. Is that what you're saying, Jeff Mount?
Yeah. And to the credit of the folks at the state level, I mean, the governor several years ago put out his California Water Action Plan. And this is front and center, recognized as a future problem, and that we have to adapt to that. And, of course, our primary adaptation to this is going to be increasing storage, probably not surface storage like reservoirs, but really a great emphasis on trying to get water back in the ground as a place to store it for dry times.
I see. Well, before we jump into groundwater, Mark asks, we generally hear statistics relative to average, given the more dynamic rain performance over the last several years, even maybe decades. Could we get a definition of this average we keep comparing to? Dan Brecke, do you want to try that?
Well, I'll try it. I mean, the average is exactly what it says. So, you know, before I go any further, it's really important to note when we talk about all climate and weather statistics that we're dealing with sort of a limited data set in a way. We're not dealing with, this isn't the average over infinity back to, you know, the birth of Christ. This is for how long records have been kept in California, and how long those records have been kept is all over the map. So there are, for instance, and I mentioned the 8-station index. That's the average of 8 places that are very wet in general in Northern California, from Lake Shasta down to Interstate 80. And those statistics only go back about 95 years. So what they do there is they are just taking the every year they take the total rainfall for those eight places and they divide it by eight and come up with this index. And but again, your whole database is only 95 years. That's generally true when you see average reservoir storage. There's a report that comes out from the California Department of Water Resources every day with about 45 selected reservoirs, the biggest and other key reservoirs in the state. And they look at several things. They look at storage today, storage a year ago, and average storage. And as Jeff pointed out, what we're dealing with now is, in general, the state looks okay. We're at about 105% of average for this date. But if runoff doesn't appear, and it would have to be a magic act for us to get significant runoff at this point, then things are going to look a lot different in a few months because we tap all these reservoirs for a wide variety of purposes, mainly agriculture. But, you know, we have 40 million people or close to it in California, and they're all depending to some extent or other on these reservoirs.
Jeff Mount, you were talking a little bit about water storage just before I asked Mark's question. And, you know, it made me think about this announcement this week from the state that it's going to scale back its Delta Tunnels project, which is known as WaterFix, which, is it fair to say, is kind of an important water distribution project as well. And I'm just curious how that relates to what we're talking about in terms of, you know, the way the state manages its water.
So I think most Californians don't appreciate that this is a highly interconnected system here, that your online listeners in San Diego who just drank a glass of water, some of that water came from the west slope of the Rocky Mountains in Wyoming, and some of it came out of the Trinity River in far northern California. So this is an interconnected system, and we rely heavily on moving water from abundance to scarcity or high demand. And so we always talk about storage, you know, building reservoirs, but probably the most significant constraint is conveyance, the ability to move water around. So this WaterFix that the Delta Tunnels, as it's called, or the Twin Tunnels, it was called up until yesterday. these projects themselves are conveyance projects, and we all know in the water business is 75% of the precipitation in California falls north of Sacramento, and 75% of the use of that precipitation is south of Sacramento. And so the Delta and these tunnels, the Delta forms an important hub in this interconnected water supply system. And so that's really what that was trying to get at, the WaterFix. Now, so what is the first question? What if it happens or it doesn't? We have to remember that the biggest potential storage, future storage in California is in the ground in the San Joaquin Valley, where we've been overdrafting it for most of the last century and certainly up to today. So if you don't build WaterFix, and I will tell you, as a scientist, I'm agnostic about this, but if you don't build WaterFix, it's going to make it darn hard to try and utilize that storage, which is south of the Delta. That is to move water from the abundance in the Sacramento Basin into the San Joaquin.
But what does anything get lost when it goes from two tunnels to one? I mean, I know the state is saying that they will build a second one if there's money, but there are a lot of analysts who are predicting this will just end up being one tunnel. So, I mean, will that mean a significantly reduced amount of water or effectiveness in conveyance?
You know, most people imagine, well, if you scale down from one tunnel to two, you get half the water, and that's just not the case. And if you look closely at the documentation, the one of the two tunnels was going to be empty the vast majority of the time anyways. What it does reduce is your capacity to pump a lot of water during really, really wet years like 2017. But I remind everybody, you already have two major pumping stations in the south part of the Delta. So, no, its performance will be reduced in terms of water supply, but it certainly won't be halved. But in fact, it will not be reduced by very much.
And, Dan Brecke, it seems like even though it'll be one tunnel at this point, that people who are concerned about the environmental footprint left by these tunnels, that one tunnel will not reduce that as well, meaning the issues that they're concerned about with regard to the ecosystem there in the
Delta.
Well, no, and the fish.
I mean, a single tunnel would be about 45 feet in diameter. So imagine a five-story building or four-story building, and it would be as deep as 150 feet underground. So it's an enormously, potentially enormously disruptive project to the Delta itself. And then, you know, earlier iterations of this plan had you know, to appease environmental concerns and local concerns, as well as to, you know, for good faith reasons, to try to really improve habitat in the Delta. There had been an expansive plan to spend money to do that. Now that's been dropped, and so people are not very trusting of the benefits. When I say people, environmental community, local community in the Delta, many people are not very trusting of the promised benefits of this.
Well, let's go to our callers. Anne in Sonoma County, you're on.
Hi, yeah, I am calling. I work for the Sonoma County Water Agency, and we've been working on a project for several years now with the Bureau of Reclamation and the Army Corps of Engineers and a bunch of other local and state partners, too, on it's called forecast-informed reservoir operations. And the goal is to try to save every drop of water possible in a reservoir by, you know, using the new and better forecasting so that we can preserve that water when we get the rain and not really have to release it for flood control purposes like you were talking about earlier, unless we know that there's a really big storm coming and which could which could endanger lives downstream. So I wonder if either of you have done any reporting or looked into forecast informed reservoir operations and what you think about the possibilities of that to help us in the future.
Well, you know, I'll just jump in and say I did. You know, we have followed this. Our reporter Lauren Summer has actually reported on this very issue. And some people do see it as the future of operations for some reservoirs. Anyway, it would be looking at both your immediate forecast data and then longer term to try to, you know, when you see you have an immediate heavy precipitation event, for instance, followed by a long dry period, maybe you don't need to follow the Army Corps of Engineers flood manual or operations manual and release, you know, X amount of water. You could save some. And I believe there was the operations up at Lake Mendocino actually did that this winter there. And they thought they may have saved 20,000 acre feet of water, enough for 50,000 people for a year.
Well, Anne, thanks for telling us about that. Karen says, the minute I heard that the state was officially lifting the drought restrictions, my thought was, what idiots? Clearly, we have a lot of short-term thinking politicians and state employees that don't believe in the effects of global warming. And Shannon tweets, I don't think we should declare the drought over until we have 5 years of abundant rain and snow. I live in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and my well source has run dry, which has never happened in its 120 years of existence. That gets back to the groundwater you were talking about, Jeff Mount. I mean, in 2014, didn't they pass a law to try to start regulating groundwater extraction? How's that going?
Well, actually, surprisingly well. So in 2014, the legislature passed the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. And this is for the first time in 100 years since our so-called modern water rights system was developed, we recognize that you're going to have to sustainably manage groundwater statewide. And there's a series of what we call critical or high-priority basins that it focuses on. And they have to have plans together by 2020 in how to do this, and then they have to come into sustainability by 2040. That sounds like a long time away, but remember, groundwater operates at very slow processes. It takes years for changes to occur in groundwater. It's not like surface water. But I have to tell you, this, we have yet to really fathom how difficult it's going to be to achieve this sustainability. California has been going to the well, to use a bad pun, for quite a long time, actually starting in the 1920s, and has been basically mining groundwater to sustain principally agriculture in the San Joaquin Valley, very high-value agriculture, in fact. And this is going to be tough to do, and we're sort of waiting to see how it goes. But I will tell you, this is probably the most transformative legislation in a generation, at least a generation or two, in California. We just don't know it yet.
Well, let's go to more calls, and let's start with Ben in San Jose.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering what steps are taken or being taken to get new sources of water available. For example, I know that there's been a lot of talk about desalination plants or just making the water we already use, reusing it through wastewater treatment facilities.
Jeff Mount, is investing in new water sources the way to go?
The mantra these days is all of the above, and that is there's no silver bullet solution to water scarcity in California. You have to use a diversified portfolio. In fact, when you look back at the drought, the urban areas that did the best in this last drought were the ones who literally had a diversified portfolio of sources of water. So all of the above. Right now, there's a lot of interest in, particularly in urban areas, in stormwater recapture, recycling, and reuse of water, which was unfortunately named toilet to tap. Terrible name. Thank you, San Diego, for that. But it is trying to use as diverse an array of sources as possible. Now, the problem is some of these are very expensive. Desalinization is at the top of the list in terms of cost. And this is... So, right. It still matters what you have to pay for that water. Surface storage, new reservoirs like the large reservoirs they're proposing, that some are proposing in the Central Valley, very expensive water. Some point out that actually just conservation itself frees up new water at a much lower cost. So you're going to see a mixed portfolio of approaches to management of water in the future. There are no silver bullets.
Well, here's Vincent on conservation. There is no drought or lack of water. Two simple steps need to be taken. Ban all green lawns, except at parks and golf courses, and cut 5% of the agricultural water allotment and give it to residential users. Wow, that would be controversial. This will solve the water problem for 100 years, but there's no political will until the situation gets really bad, which it will. John asks, with changing how timber is harvested in the Sierra, i.e. selective cutting, conserve water or snow better and change how it runs off? And Julie has a similar tweet, Dan. The best way to conserve water from fog and rain is to stop cutting down trees.
Well, it's really interesting, and it's a little counterintuitive. I mean, you just look at a mountainside with trees and you go, well, that's good. I like to see that mountainside with trees. There's actually been some research done that has shown that overly dense growth of trees because of fire suppression policies that have been in place for the last century have actually started to cut into runoff in mountain streams. It actually makes some sense. I mean, the mountain terrain we see now, the mountain vegetation, is dramatically different from what it was when Europeans first arrived here. So as I said, it's counterintuitive. More trees, not necessarily a good thing. And there is talk about what you need to do to sort of change course on that. There's more than talk. I mean, if you go online right now, you can see that there are managed fires going on all over the state because that policy of trying to do selective burns to clear out some of this forest terrain is in place, but is ongoing. But, we're far from... It's an immense state, and we're far from tackling any of this.
Dan Brecke is editor and reporter for KQED News. Jeff Mount is senior fellow at the Public Policy Institute of California and emeritus professor of earth and planetary sciences at UC Davis. And we're talking about the lack of rain we've had. We're talking about the state's announcement this week about its Delta Tunnel project that's known as Water Fix across the state. I dropped that S now, I guess, as this seems to be moving ahead. And we're talking with you, our listeners. And let's go next to David in San Francisco. Hi, David.
Hi. Thank you so much for having this conversation. I think it's a really important one. I work at the California Academy of Sciences in San Francisco, and based on the fourth National Climate Assessment, which came out a few months ago, which is the most comprehensive climate assessment based on the most up-to-date science, it basically told us that we're no longer experiencing our grandparents' weather anymore, and I think that it would be short-sighted to assume that we're going to have anything close to the amounts of rain that you know California is used to having historically. And so, you know, moving forward, I think that all of the above method, I think, is very prudent, and I think it is necessary to maintain, you know, a water supply here in California. But thank you so much for having the conversation.
Well, David, thank you for your comment. Let me go to another David in Winters. Hi, David.
Hi. This is going to be difficult. Give me a second. We can build a pipeline from Canada to Texas to move oil, but we can't build a pipeline from the flooded areas in the south over to California to fill a reservoir. It doesn't make sense to me. But the other thing is, it seems kind of ridiculous to build a tunnel underneath California to take water from drought-stricken Northern California and send it down to drought-stricken Southern California. So I really think we need to rethink the entire operation and spend our money where it is most wisely used. I hope that all made sense.
Yeah, it did, David, and thanks for the point. Jeff Mount, I know you've thought a lot about what needs to be done in terms of strategies that the state needs to do to think more long-term about how to address what, you know, both David and David have brought up as a changing climate and also the way that we move water in this state. I did read that the state Water Resources Control Board is considering perhaps even this month to make permanent some of the conservation rules that were enacted during the drought. But I imagine you think there's much more that needs to be done. If you want to just quickly in the last 20 seconds that we have here, tell us what you think those are.
So, yeah, real quickly, the State Water Resources Control Board is doing something we haven't really seen in the past, and that is they're trying to change behavior. They're trying to make conservation a way of life. We will all remember that during the height of the drought that Jerry Brown hates lawns. We heard this again and again. And this is trying to get Californians to, in the same way we embedded recycling into our daily lives, is to start thinking about water conservation in our daily lives.
Well, Jeff Mount, thank you so much for talking with us this morning. I'm sorry we have to end it there. And thank you, Dan Brecke.
You're welcome.
This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Another hour is next. Stay with us.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.